coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
It's election time, and we'll hear from the two candidates vying for the 74th Wisconsin Assembly District seat on the November ballot.
This is a perfect example of the majority party not passing something that looks quite benign, actually, right? No one was going to be hurt. It was just something nice to do.
My question is, why did you cave to the political pressure from Governor Evers and your leadership by refusing to cross the aisle and overturn the governor's veto on this bill, flip-flopping from your previous votes?
Plus, our weekly roundup of regional news. Coming up next. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Today, we continue our debate series of candidates for seats in the Wisconsin Assembly on the November 3rd ballot. We'll speak with the two candidates for the 74th District, which includes Ashland, Bayfield, Iron, and Price counties, and a portion of Douglas, Sawyer, and Vilas counties. The candidates are the incumbent, Democrat Beth Myers, who has served in the seat since 2014. She hails from Bayfield and holds a bachelor's in sociology from Northland College. She spent 9 years working for the Red Cliff Tribe, most recently heading its Family Services Division. She later served as executive director for Core Community Resources, serving seniors in the Shawamigan Bay Area. Myers spent 5 years on the Bayfield County Board before her election to the Assembly. She lives in the town of Russell with her husband, Kevin Buzicki. Welcome to Simply Superior, Beth Myers.
Thank you very much, Robin.
Also with us is the challenger, Republican James Bolin. James has more than 2 decades' experience in resort management. He's a board member on the Bayfield County Economic Development Corporation, helping to organize cross-country skiing events like the Junior National Qualifier and the American Birkebeiner. From 2006 to 2019, James was executive director for the Cable Area Chamber of Commerce. He's successfully been on International Paralympic Committee World Cup events in 2012 and 2013 and served on the organizing committee for the 2015 championships. James and his wife, Heather, live in Cable. Welcome to Simply Superior, James Bolin.
Thanks for having me.
So our first question, and we'll start with Ms. Myers. Why do you think you're the best person to represent the 74th District in the coming term?
First, thank you to Wisconsin Public Radio for hosting this debate. I was born and raised here in northern Wisconsin, just a stone's throw from the shore of Lake Superior. In 2014, I first ran to represent the 74th Assembly District because I love my home and I wanted to be a champion for the people of the Northland. I'm running now because I've stuck by that mission, but I'm not done yet. This pandemic has brought so much tragedy to our nation with hundreds of thousands of jobs lost. In our district, this pandemic has also laid bare existing inequalities and issues we need to come together to solve. Every working and retired person in our district should have a living wage, affordable and accessible health care, and access to basic utilities, including reliable broadband. I also serve to lay a foundation for the next generations. We must invest in thriving communities, public schools, and protection of our natural environment. As your representative, I will continue to listen to you and represent you. I'm not afraid to reach across the aisle, to have difficult conversations, and to put in the work to get things done. I'm humbled every day that you've elected me to be your voice in the legislature, and I hope you will do it again.
Thank you, Beth Myers. James Bolin, why are you the best candidate for the 74th District?
Well, thank you. And I, too, want to thank Wisconsin Public Radio for the opportunity to have this discussion, this debate, and to discuss the issues that are so important here in northern Wisconsin. I'm running for the 74th Assembly seat because I think northern Wisconsin needs a stronger voice in Madison. I believe you elect your representative, and they go down to where the bills are being passed, and they make sure that the other legislators understand how those bills are going to affect our area. As I have traveled around the 74th District in this campaign, I have heard over and over again from the folks within the district that Madison passes a lot of bills that don't make sense here in northern Wisconsin. or that they forget about that we even exist at all. As your next state representative, I want to make sure that that does not continue to happen. I love northern Wisconsin. I was born here in Park Falls. I grew up in Sawyer County and have lived for almost 30 years in the Cable area. This is where I met my wife, and Heather and I have chosen to live and raise our children here as well. Northern Wisconsin is an amazing place. The natural resources are remarkable, and it is the area that people love to come to. For the last 23 years, my family has run the Lake Owen Resort just outside of Cable, and it truly is a family business that we work at together. For 12 years, as you mentioned, I also served as the executive director for the Cable Area Chamber of Commerce, and I held that role under the Doyle administration, which was the last Democrat administration, and then also for the Walker administration as well. And I worked very closely with both administrations. I hosted Governor Doyle for numerous events in the Cable area when we touted Norvado and the broadband expansion project that they were going to be doing. When we opened the first medical clinic ever in Bayfield County in Cable, I had the governor come and cut the ribbon for that, as well as the Natural History Museum's grand opening. And then we also had the governor here for a trip on the Namekagon River, a trip down the river. Governor Walker appointed me to serve on his Governor's Council on Tourism, which I did for 8 years. And I worked very closely with secretaries in both administrations in tourism, transportation, DNR. What I found in my role at the chamber is that building relationships is the key to moving things forward and getting things done. And I can build those relationships that we need down in Madison to make sure that we're forgotten no longer.
All right. Thank you, James Bowen. So we will begin with the questioning, starting again with Ms. Myers. Following the shooting of Jacob Blake by police in Kenosha, Assembly Speaker Robin Vulse created a task force to address issues related to policing and racial disparities. The Evers administration had proposed a package of 9 bills after the death of George Floyd in May. Do you think either of these plans can seriously improve the relations between police departments and the state's African American community?
I put out a press statement shortly after the shooting, and my heart broke for everyone that was involved with that, everyone that knew George Floyd, the community, and the law enforcement personnel. It's tragic what is happening in our country and in our state when it comes to racial disparities. We have an increase in our prison populations, the worst racial disparities in the nation, and an ongoing drug epidemic. Wisconsin communities need smart criminal justice to address crime and expand alternatives to putting people in prison. We need safe communities and living wages to lift people out of poverty. We need good schools and educational opportunities for everyone willing to put in the hard work to get a high school degree or a 2-year degree from a technical school or a 4-year degree. We need mentors in communities to help those struggling to see a light at the end of the tunnel. Your zip code shouldn't determine part of your fate. And we need police reform too. There are a list of bills out there right now, and you mentioned that, Robin, waiting for the legislature to work on, including bills that establish statewide use of force policies, requiring every officer to complete force options and de-escalation techniques each year, and requiring the barring of the use of chokeholds. The bottom line with this, we need to work together across political lines to solve our crime problem. Law and order is divisive and inflammatory language. We need to de-escalate the fear, pain, and suffering taking place in our state and our country. I've long stood behind police force, and I have great relationships with officers in my district, with judges and district attorneys, and together we can solve this issue, but we can't do it pitting each other against one another.
Okay, Ms. Myers. Mr. Bolin, will either the plans for a task force put forth by Speaker Robin Vulse or Governor Evers' bills seriously improve the relations between police departments and the state's African-American community?
Well, I do think that it is important that we get community leaders and law enforcement officials working together to establish a dialogue. I think that, you know, building that dialogue and having them working together in a productive manner is the best way to move the process forward. I have spoken with sheriffs throughout the 74th District and also folks in law enforcement in my area. And, you know, I've learned that this is a very complicated issue and that I still have a lot to learn on it. I want to make sure that we take steps not only to protect the citizens, but also the officers that are involved in these situations. You referenced some of the bills that have been put forward. And, you know, some of them, like, for example, the no-knock warrant legislation that's being looked at, actually would not be a police reform. That's a court reform because law enforcement has to go to a judge in order to get a no-knock warrant. And in many of those cases, law enforcement is seeking those no-knock warrants because they want to protect the individual with whom they're about to come in contact. I had a lengthy conversation with one of our sheriffs, and he gave me a really good example of that. They had a situation where a gentleman was a threat to himself and to his family. The family was able to get out of the home safely. The individual was drinking and you know, sitting in the living room with an assault rifle style gun right next to him. They could see him through the window, but they could also see that he was very inebriated and continuing to drink. And so they got a no-knock warrant and then just simply waited until, you know, he passed out. And they went in and were able to apprehend him before he was able to do harm to himself or anyone else. And in that case, had they had to knock on the door before they went in, they could have woken him up and startled him. And, you know, it could have had an entirely different outcome either for himself or for the officers. And so, you know, some of these issues need to be looked at very closely. But again, as I said, I want to make sure that we take steps not only to protect the citizens, but also make sure that we protect the officers that are involved in these situations as well. So I look forward to learning more about this as I serve in the legislature.
Okay, Mr. Bowen. Ms. Myers, any rebuttal?
No.
All right, so we will move on. Ms. Myers, you're a member of the Governor's Task Force on Broadband. And by the way, in a previous debate, one of the candidates mentioned broadband not working in cable, which I thought was ironic. What does that task force or the legislature need to do to bring reliable internet to the Northwoods once and for all?
Oh, really good question, Robin. I've been a champion for broadband expansion long before I was elected to the assembly because I believe that 21st century technology is what's going to happen to keep northern Wisconsin thriving. We have an aging population. Unless we figure out a way to retain and recruit young people to stay here or to move here, literally we're dying off. And one of the ways we can encourage people to live in northern Wisconsin is by having quality broadband and consistent cell phone coverage. Those two things have to go together. Governor Evers' budget put $48 million into broadband expansion, more money than any other administration has put in. And I'm proud to be a member of this task force as we decide how that money is going to be allocated through the Public Service Commission. In the past, people would apply for grants and, you know, if they had a selling story, they would receive the funding. But this time we need to look at where are the areas in the state that do not have access to quality broadband and really target where this funding goes. Taxpayer dollars should always be used to the best of our ability. We never want to take advantage of taxpayers and their hard work that give us this money. So I'm looking forward to seeing how I can help steer the conversation and to make sure that northern Wisconsin gets their fair share. It's what I do every day when I'm in Madison and when I'm working on the assembly floor. Northern Wisconsin has not been forgotten under my leadership.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Myers. Mr. Bowen, what does the governor's task force or the legislature need to do to bring reliable internet to the Northwoods once and for all?
You know, it's great to see the investment that that the state has been putting into the budgets for the last several years to expand broadband, especially broadband here in rural areas. You mentioned in a previous debate, someone talking about not having good broadband in the cable area. As the director of the Chamber of Commerce, Norvado is actually headquartered here in Cable. And as I mentioned before, we had Governor Doyle here about 11 years ago to highlight the investment that Norvado was putting in to put fiber optic in many places of the district, of the area that they serve. It's important to understand that, you know, there are federal dollars that are put towards broadband expansion as well as state dollars. And sometimes those dollars come with restrictions and loopholes. For example, the funding, the federal funding that Norvado got could only be spent in areas that didn't have an upload speed of 5 megabytes. So as they were building out their network, you ended up with areas where they had gotten the fiber in that had really strong broadband. And yet, like within the town of Cable, the broadband signal wasn't as strong because Norvado couldn't use the funds to put it there. They did eventually get there. And, you know, when they're doing this expansion, it's very expensive to run fiber and internet service to a lot of these rural areas. I spoke to a gentleman on a door just this week that was frustrated because he had to use a dish and he didn't have good internet. And he talked about the economic impact of it. And I think that's an important piece of this. You know, you have an awful lot of kids who right now are at home doing school virtually, and they need internet access. And if you have a family that has, you know, multiple children and they're all using a different computer for their schoolwork, that can bog down that system and make it challenging. So it is unbelievably important that we continue to invest in broadband expansion here in northern Wisconsin, because it affects our kids. It affects our ability to have virtual schools during this pandemic. And, you know, I mentioned earlier my role at the Chamber of Commerce, but I also served on the Bayfield County Economic Development Corporate Board. And we look at the economic impact. We put together and created a telecommuting certificate that we then were very proud to have the town of Cable and Bayfield County be the very first telecommuter forward certified county, because we understood that there is an opportunity. You're seeing through this pandemic where a lot of people who are employed and living in the Twin Cities and other areas, bigger urban areas, are choosing to be at their lake home or their second home because they have that broadband access. They can work from home, and they would much rather be spending their time here in northern Wisconsin than in the cities. And so there's an economic benefit to this going forward. So I would certainly like to see the legislature continue to fund broadband expansion, because it's just too critical for economies, families, school, and education. We need to invest in broadband.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Boland. Ms. Myers, any rebuttal?
No.
Okay, moving on. Ms. Myers, you co-sponsored a bill with 21 other Democrats and 2 Republicans. It sought official sanction to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the creation of the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore. Unfortunately, it failed. What should you have done to bring Republicans along on what would seem to be a fairly non-controversial measure?
Robin, that's a really good question, and it's much bigger than this one particular bill for the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore. We need to work together. This is a perfect example of the majority party not passing something that looks quite benign, actually, right? No one was going to be hurt. And if I remember correctly, there was no financial commitment to this. It was just something nice to do. And that's an example of the majority party not working across the aisle to get something done. There are many important bills that have been entered or introduced in the legislature that can't see the light of day. And I'd like to talk about one of those that I think is extremely important. I was a co-sponsor for the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Bill. And that bill that would have established a task force to look at this issue, couldn't get a committee hearing while we were in session. Towards the end, it got a committee hearing. I sat in that room for hours hearing the heart-wrenching stories from families who have lost their daughters and young girls and community members because of this tragic situation. That got a hearing at the end of the session when we weren't going to be back on the floor, which everyone in the building knew it was going to die in committee, and it did. And then Attorney General Josh Call picked it up, and he is working on establishing a task force because he doesn't need the legislature to do that. So thank you for asking the question about the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore, but it just is highlighting how important it is that we work together on important issues when we're on the assembly floor.
Thank you, Ms. Myers. Mr. Bolin, a different version of the question since you weren't in office. First, can you see yourself being one of only two Republican co-sponsors on a bill with 22 Democrats? And secondly, would you have supported celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore?
Not only would I have gone across the aisle and supported it, I was actually in Bayfield when the U.S. Mint released the Apostle Islands quarter. And you know, it was incredible to see how many people showed up from around the nation to celebrate the launch of that quarter and the importance that the Apostle Islands plays here in northern Wisconsin. You know, our natural resources are second to none. And the Apostle Islands and the 50th anniversary of it should have been a nonpartisan issue. What I have found is I've had various members of the legislature up here and sat down and had conversations with them. And I find that, you know, they don't necessarily know or understand the issues that are impacting our area because they know their area. And again, as I said in my opening statement, I think it's your legislator's job to make sure that you explain those things and have those conversations. And so, you know, I certainly would have stepped across the aisle, and I don't think that that necessarily needed to be a partisan issue. I think that, you know, if you can make the argument, and that's why I say I want to go down and be a stronger voice for us in Madison, because I think that we need to be able to have those conversations and get people to step across the aisle, especially on issues that are non-partisan, non-political, non-confrontational. We certainly should be able to find commonality there. And so the work that I did in the chamber, working with people across the aisles, with, as I mentioned before, Secretary Frank, who served in the Doyle administration, you know, I had some very good, strong conversations with him on the management of the bear populations and deer populations and the impact that that was having on the economy. And we talked after some of those public comments, and he thanked me for the way that I framed my questions. And it really was about trying to find answers and move forward. And so I think that's exactly what we need to have in Madison, is a representative who can actually move those projects forward and find common ground. And to do that, you have to be willing to step across the aisle yourself.
Thank you. Ms. Myers, any rebuttal?
Yes, I do. I have reached across the aisle, and I have talked with my colleagues about important issues in the Capitol, including being selected for two of Speaker Voss's task force, one on foster care and one on Alzheimer's and dementia. And we did work together. So the media and some people would like us all to think that it's constant bickering in Madison, because it's like if you go out on a boat on a sunny day and come back and tell everyone you had a great time, they're not as interested as if you were to say we went out and the waves were big and there were white caps. So the media likes to grab on to the hot stories, but there's a lot of good work that goes on between the aisles and between people who care about the issues we're working on. And I'm one of those people. I know how to work across the aisle. where the bottleneck happens, it's with the speaker's office. And he gets to say what bills get to the assembly floor and what bills are going to get a vote and what committees get to have a hearing. So let's put the blame where it needs to go. And I think we have a lot of work in Madison we could do together.
Thank you. Mr. Boland, a rebuttal to the rebuttal?
Yeah, I think that it's one thing to say that you can reach across the aisle, but then sit there and give example after example after example of where Republicans haven't been able to work with you. If you're able to work with them, great. If you're not, then that could be an issue. And so by Ms. Meyer's own admission, she says that Speaker Voss is the problem. And so if she's saying that she cannot work with Speaker Voss, you know, and he's the assembly speaker who makes those decisions, then maybe it's time we send a different representative down there who can get those things done.
All right. Thank you both. You're listening to a special edition of Simply Superior featuring a debate between the two candidates for the Wisconsin State Assembly seat for the 74th District. The candidates are incumbent Beth Byers, a Democrat from the town of Russell, and her challenger, James Boland, a Republican from Cable. I'm Robin Washington. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and we're continuing with our debate of the two candidates to represent the 74th District in the Wisconsin State Assembly. They are Beth Myers, the incumbent Democrat from the town of Russell. Welcome back, Beth.
Thank you.
And her challenger, James Boland, a Republican from Cable. Welcome back, James.
Thank you.
So let's resume. This time, Mr. Boland will go first. Mr. Boland, you've been quite involved with plans to redevelop the Telemark Lodge, most recently in a private effort to purchase it earlier this year. Is there a role for the state to jumpstart it? And if so, if elected, can you keep your private efforts and public initiatives separate on it? Or would you need to?
Absolutely. You know, in my role as the executive director of the Cable Area Chamber of Commerce, I was around at the time when Telemark was open and saw the economic impact that the successful Telemark resort can have, not only on like the chamber's room tax dollars and marketing dollars, but also the direct visitor spending that those people that were staying at Telemark had on other businesses in the area. So when they closed their doors, it was tragic. It made a real challenge for a lot of businesses in the area, because those visitors now were not staying in the Cable area. So I worked with a variety of developers that were looking at doing a Telemark project, and ultimately all of those were unsuccessful. But my role as the director was to try to help them in any way that I could. When I left the chamber position, I was actually on my way out to announce the Nordic State High School Championships, and drove by the lodge and saw, you know, the condition that it was turning into. And the last group of developers ran into a situation where there were some environmental concerns and some title concerns that needed to be addressed before they could actually move forward with the project. And the current owner was unwilling to do so. And as I drove by, I thought, it's really sad if this lodge continues to fall apart, then you know, they're going to have to address those concerns, but there's not going to be a rebirth of the lodge or all of those jobs. And really, it was the jobs and economic impact part that was really important to me. So I did lead an effort to try to purchase the lodge and the ski hill. It would have been about a $40 million investment and brought over 200 jobs to the Cable area. It would have, you know, had a huge tax impact for the town of Cable, for Bayfield County, about $1.6 million a year, $270,000 in room tax, and then a significant boost, obviously, to the school district with the property tax dollars as well. Ultimately, that project was not successful, but I'm still working with the same partners that I have, and we're looking at a different project, actually bigger in scope, would have a greater impact, And I'm optimistic that we've seen great movement on that. And I think we're hopeful to be able to make some announcements shortly. But I mean, that's kind of my wheelhouse, is trying to grow the economy, bring jobs to the area, understand the business climate and how we grow it. And to the second part of your question, if I'm in the state legislature, obviously, if it's a bill specific to a project that I'm working on, I would not vote on that bill. But, you know, I think it's important that you have a representative who understands the economic conditions that need to exist in order for investment to take place in northern Wisconsin. And I'm excited to be working on a project that could have a huge impact on the region.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Boland. Ms. Myers, a slightly different version of the question. What should a state be doing, or what can you do, to encourage the redevelopment of Telemark, or does it need to?
I know that Telemark has had a history in the southern part of Bayfield County for many years, but if you look at the current condition of the building and the property, I'm not exactly sure that state money should go to help rebuild that particular building or that project. I know we are in desperate need of businesses to come to northern Wisconsin and thrive. And I will work to make sure that solid plans get the light of day and the support from me and my colleagues in the assembly. I'm just not sure that specific question you asked, if Telemark is the project. There's been promises made and broken over many, many years with Telemark, and seemed like somebody was coming in and somebody was going to, you know, put up all this money, and then the county board was asked for help, or the local town municipality was asked for help, and then that offer went away. And then there was another offer and another offer. So I think we have to be careful when we talk about what we're going to do in the district and make sure that the plans are solid before we have too many expectations out there and get people, you know, geared up to, oh, good, I get to get a job. You know, I get to work in my community. We should have solid plans in place.
Thank you, Ms. Myers. Mr. Boland, any rebuttal?
Nope.
All right. We will now give you a chance to ask a question of each other. Mr. Boland, what would you like to ask your opponent?
Sure. You know, I actually have appreciated Beth and the work that she has done in the assembly. And there have been some things that she has done that has been most helpful. She testified in favor of a piece of legislation that I was pushing forward a couple of years ago, specific to the town of Cable. So I really do appreciate her work. And, you know, I look at Wisconsin, and it's facing right now a shortage of caregiving workforce. About 25% of the caregiver positions in Wisconsin's nursing homes currently sit vacant, and the 74th district clearly has an aging population. Ms. Myers decided to take a stand and solve the problem by supporting a bill that made it easier to train, attract, retain staff by aligning Wisconsin's federal standards for those nursing home CNA workers. She voted for it in her committee. She voted for it on the floor. But then it went to the governor's office and he vetoed it. So my question is, why did you cave to the political pressure from Governor Evers and your leadership by refusing to cross the aisle and overturn the governor's veto on this bill, flip-flopping from your previous votes?
Ms. Myers, your response?
Thank you, Robin. The CNA bill was a tough decision to go either way, because I had people on both sides of the issue. When I was in the committee, I had people telling me that changing the hours was very important to help get people in the door, to help the nursing homes and care facilities in the 74th get workers there, and other people saying, we can't change the hours. It's too important. We need this training available. And I talked to my nursing homes, every one of the administrators in the 74th district, and got their input. And that's why in committee and on the floor, I went with reducing the hours. And then you get more information and more people talking to you. You know, it was a done deal at that point. And then the governor decided to veto it. And I had more information and had had more conversations. And what I heard repeatedly from people, when I talked about the 25 hours of training, they said that's just a small part of what we need. What we really need is better reimbursement rates for Medicaid and Medicare. I know because I was on the Bayfield County Board and I served as a member of the Northern Lights Nursing Home Board in that capacity, that every month it was, you know, the financial situation would be red one month, black the next month, red, black. They never knew if they were going to be able to keep their doors open because they were literally on a shoestring budget. So taking away the issue of CNA and training and talking more about how do we get more money into the nursing homes and care facilities. And one of those ways is definitely, without doubt, there's statistics and proof that this would work, is to accept the federal Medicaid expansion money.
Thank you, Ms. Myers. Mr. Boland, any rebuttal?
You know, you bring up Medicaid reimbursement rates, and in the last two budget cycles, they've actually increased Medicaid reimbursement rates by a little over 11%, and Beth voted against them. But specific to this piece of legislation, it was in Beth's committee, and as a member of the committee, she could have asked questions, she could have made amendments and recommendations if she had concerns about the legislation. She didn't. She voted for it out of committee. It went to the floor of the legislature. They voted for it. Not that much time transpired between the time they voted for it and Governor Evers vetoed it. So I think it would have been an example where she could have stepped across the aisle and garnered some credit with Republicans by supporting a bill that would have helped seniors and certainly people that are, you know, the county, as she mentioned as well, here in Bayfield County, but the many seniors that live in the 74th District.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Myers, a rebuttal to the rebuttal?
No.
Okay. Ms. Myers, is there a question you'd like to ask Mr. Boland?
There is. Thank you. James, you know, we live in an area with an aging population and many hard workers. We need access to affordable, quality health care. You want to join a caucus that refuses to accept the federal Medicaid expansion money, although we know that would help so many people. What is your plan to accept the Medicaid expansion funds to alleviate the medical needs of so many in the 74th District?
You keep trying to blame me for the actions of Republicans down in the legislature. And again, I want to point out that I am not a representative from the area. I have not been down in the legislature. I have not taken any of these bills. And so, you know, I just think it's important to point out that, you know, I am who I am and who I say I am. And I have not yet had an opportunity to make those decisions. So I want to make sure that that's really clear. In regards to Medicaid expansion, you know, again, a lot of these issues are somewhat complicated. But when you look at what Wisconsin has done in regards to health care benefits and stuff, there are some challenges in accepting the federal dollars. And so if I understand the issue correctly, the idea was to take people above the – so Wisconsin currently covers everyone that's at 100% of the poverty level or lower with insurance. What they want to do with Medicaid is expand it to those people who are above that 100% line. But Wisconsin found a way to do that through Badger Care. And so those people do have coverage through Badger Care. My concern, there are often strings attached when you accept both state and federal dollars. I've learned that in the private sector. And so if we were to expand Medicaid to take on a bigger portion of those individuals, and then let's say something like a pandemic came along and all of a sudden the economy got really, really tight and there were less federal dollars available, and the federal government says, you know what, we can't afford to subsidize that any longer. Wisconsin, you have to pay that yourselves. It actually puts us in a much tougher financial position. And so I think the way that it's set up now, where we are covering 100% of the people at the poverty level and below with Medicaid, but we also have the BadgerCare program for those that are slightly above it, is actually the fiscally the smart thing to do.
Thank you. Ms. Myers, any rebuttal?
I do have a response. I would just say that, Mr. Bowling, you said I'm blaming you, and you were a little defensive saying you're not in Madison working on these issues yet. Well, I'm not blaming you. The only thing I did was ask you a question as to how you would alleviate the medical needs of so many in the 74th District.
Thank you. Mr. Bowling?
You know, one of the things that I think is a good example of how I would work on that is by being fiscally responsible. And you look at what we've done economically here in Wisconsin, we've got some real challenges that we're about to face moving forward because of, as Ms. Myers referenced, the many businesses that have closed their doors or have seen a downturn in the income that they've made. So there's going to be less revenue available both on the federal and on the state level. And a lot of times when that happens, the programs that get cut are the more compassionate ones. So the best thing we can do in order to get this economy going again, because it's the business people that are paying the taxes that are what the state then uses to pay for some of these programs and take care of these people. And so the most compassionate thing we can do is be fiscally responsible, but also figure out how we're going to get this economy going again so that those funds are available to help those that are in need.
Thank you, Mr. Bowling. And finally, your closing statements. We open with Ms. Myers, so we'll start with Mr. Bowling. James?
Thank you. Again, I really appreciate you for having this debate and giving us the opportunity to talk about these issues. I thank Ms. Myers for the civility that we've had in the discussions that we've had. And there's certainly, you know, a lot of passion and emotions on all sides of some of these issues. And so I appreciate the ability to have a conversation and a dialogue and try to understand the points and some of the issues in some of these complicated issues. As I mentioned before, my family has run a business here for the last 23 years. And so I know the challenges that we face trying to run a business here in northern Wisconsin, certainly through this pandemic. I have seen the challenges that we have faced as far as how to operate safely and what our revenue levels were going to be. And I think it's important that you have a representative representing the district that understands the district, that understands the challenges of the district. And so I certainly would appreciate your vote on November 3rd. I would look forward to representing the district down in Madison. And thank everyone for listening, and thank you for the time.
Thank you, James Bowling. And Beth Myers, your closing statement.
Thank you, Robin, and thank you again for hosting us today. Thank you, James, for making this a fair debate and respectful of both of our opinions. I serve as an elected representative because I feel a duty to my community and my state. I want to work together to build a better tomorrow for my children and grandchildren. Throughout this horrible pandemic, there has been one shining light. I've seen entire communities come together to take care of each other, to protect the vulnerable among us, and to reach out to those of us who are struggling. The last thing I want to see is for us to give way to divisiveness and hate. That's not the northern Wisconsin I know and love. I grew up in a place that values hard work, community, and empathy. Each day that I'm in the assembly chamber, I strive to live up to those values. In the wake of COVID-19, we will still need to come together to rebuild. I believe we must rebuild with compassion for our neighbors and a thoughtful eye to the future. As your representative, I will continue to listen to your concerns and work hard on your behalf, and I will be honored to have your vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth Myers. And that concludes this debate of the two candidates for the 74th District seat in the Wisconsin Assembly on the ballot in November's election. We'd like to thank the incumbent, Democrat Beth Myers of the town of Russell. Thank you, Beth.
You're welcome, Robin. Thank you.
And the challenger, Republican James Bowling of Cable. Thank you, James.
Oh, thank you very much.
And we'll be back after this. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and we continue now with this week's roundup of the regional news. I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hi, Robin.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So we just heard from the candidates vying to represent the Bayfield area in the next Wisconsin Assembly. Danny, one thing we didn't talk about is higher sales tax revenue in Bayfield County.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Bayfield County is actually seeing an increase this year. Sales tax revenues are up about 6% so far. And that's kind of significant because earlier this year, counties in Wisconsin were projected to see $68 million in lost revenues because of the pandemic, because it's increased unemployment and reduced retail sales and tax collections. But so far, counties are bucking that trend, and Bayfield County is one of them.
All right. Well, moving a bit further east in Iron County, we've got another financial issue going on, this one in the court system.
Yeah, and this one involves a case over a disputed credit card. A judge this week ruled that a district attorney in Iron County will not face criminal charges over allegations he issued a bogus subpoena in that case, which he's prosecuting. Basically, he asked a Milwaukee attorney to make a sworn statement that the city was associated with an account over a disputed credit card, or drive hours to testify at a hearing. But that subpoena was later revoked by a judge when it was found that no such hearing had been set. And so there was a hearing this week where the Oneida County Circuit Court Judge Michael Bloom reviewed the findings of a special prosecutor who investigated Iron County District Attorney Matthew Tingstad's conduct. And basically, the judge agreed with the findings of that prosecutor and that, you know, maybe his conduct wasn't the greatest, maybe it was unethical, but it wasn't criminal.
All right. Well, speaking of the criminal justice system and a far, far more serious case, Brooks, on the Minnesota side, some major news this week.
That's right. Derek Chauvin, one of the police officers accused of murder in the killing of George Floyd this summer, posted $1 million bond Wednesday and was released from the state prison where he was being held pending his trial. Chauvin was the officer that the world saw kneel on Floyd's neck for nearly 8 minutes as Floyd pleaded repeatedly that he couldn't breathe. He's one of four officers who have been charged. The other three had previously been released on bond.
And I think I understand the trial may be commencing in March.
Right now, trial is scheduled for March 8th, and several motions have been made to move the case out of Hennepin County, Minneapolis's home county, and possibly out of the state.
All right. Well, back on the Wisconsin side, some issues going on with BNSF and taconite.
Yeah. So for decades, BNSF, the railroad giant, of course, has been paying a few hundred homeowners small sums every year to help clean up taconite dust on the side of their homes, their yards, their roofs, their windows. It's a small sum every year, but now BNSF has stopped paying many homeowners for cleanup costs related to dust from the Eloise taconite facility on the east side of town in Superior's Eloise neighborhood. On Tuesday, the Superior City Council took up a resolution to press BNSF into resuming these payments, which the company said they suspended this summer due to, quote, irregularities in who was receiving payments. That resolution was pushed off a few weeks after the story came out and company officials reached out to the city council to say, let's start a dialogue and try to get this solved. So the history here is that BNSF has been paying sums of $200 to $500 per homeowner to about 200 homeowners for decades now. And residents this summer raised concerns that they were suddenly getting denied for payments they had long been receiving. This doesn't cover the entirety of the cost of power washing one's home. Councillor Jenny Van Sickle said that it maybe covers the water bill. But still, it does help offset the cost of living.
Well, that's, as you said, something going on for decades, long before the current situation. And the current situation, of course, is COVID-19. Back on the Minnesota side, there's an easy way to get tested for it.
That's right. There's free saliva testing at the DEC in Duluth. That's open 5 days a week, Wednesday through Sunday. Walk-ins are welcome, appointments are taken, but it takes a total of maybe 15 minutes to walk through the line, fill out information on your phone, and you get your results in 48 to 72 hours. Having taken a test myself, I can attest that it takes less than 3 days to get your results emailed. And for those wondering, thankfully, I have tested negative so far.
All right, good.
Yay.
Let's hope that continues. Danny, and the COVID front back on the Wisconsin side of the border.
Yeah, Governor Tony Evers issued an order this week to limit crowds indoors at restaurants and bars, and that was due to the spike that the state has seen in hospitalizations. Hospitals are at more than 80% of their capacity, and that actually prompted a field hospital to be set up at the State Fair Park. They'll be accepting COVID patients there next Wednesday. But back to the order, that took effect on Thursday, and that limits venues to 25% of their capacity. And there's a long list of exemptions for places like grocery stores and manufacturing plants, churches, and even campaign events. And the order will likely face challenges, just like the state's mask mandate. In that case, a conservative law firm and Wisconsin residents have filed a lawsuit saying the governor overstepped his authority, and the outcome of that challenge would likely be decided by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, whose conservative majority has slimmed somewhat after the spring election.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with my colleague, Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
And also with Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks so much, Robin.
You can read stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/North Report, and be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. Next week on Simply Superior.
You could be running a major museum soon.
If you're not quite familiar with his speaking voice, that's Mick Jagger in the movie The Burnt Orange Heresy. And one of the museums he's talking about is the Duluth Art Institute.
What is this about?
Full disclosure, I'm the board president of the Art Institute, but I was shocked as anyone to hear it mentioned in the movie.
You're not really how I imagine an art critic would look.
It premiered this spring, but because of COVID-19, only now begins a very limited run at the West Theater in Duluth tonight.
Can't tell me you never wanted to paint.
Spoiler alert, the city has a starring role in the film, which we'll talk about next week. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.